south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, when expats come down here and buy or rent a house, many times when they find a deal in a great location and it's very cheap, and the house or rental unit is nice too, the problem is, because you are in the third world and Latins have their set of standards and you have yours, one of the big complaints I hear, and I complain about it myself, is that the kitchens and bathrooms in particular are not up to first world standards. Even in those luxury condos and apartments that are really ultra first class all the way, with granite and marble everywhere, arched Spanish ceilings with rainforest hardwood beams, beautiful rustic Spanish terracotta tile everywhere, and just a lot of really unique details and craftsmanship. Yet, when you go into the kitchen or the bathroom, often they'll have that beautiful granite countertop, yet they'll have a $59 stainless steel trailer court sink, and crappy faucets made in China that leak after about 2 months. And stranger yet, in a lot of the luxury homes, especially the ones built in the last 20 or 30 years, they'll have a beautiful porcelain bidet in the bathroom. Now, go figure. It's hard to reconcile something like that in the same room as a stainless steel trailer court bar sink. Yep, and I mentioned this in a show a long time ago, that in some of the older houses, those elegant Spanish-style jobs, they'll have a bidet in every bathroom. And it's obvious they never use the things, because you can tell when you look at them that they're dry as a bone and they've been that way for ages. And just as an aside here, how many of you, if confronted with one of these things, would know what to do with it? Tell you the truth, the first time I saw one, which was back in Europe in the early 80s, I wanted to try it, but it scared the hell out of me. So yes, I chickened out. And I bet if I did take a poll, only one out of maybe 10,000 Americans has ever had the cojones to squat on one of those. God, that conjures a nasty image, huh? But back to the point that in Latin America, you could have a spectacular house or condo in every way, except when it comes to the kitchen and the bathroom. And it's not that there's anything wrong with the Latin contractors and construction people. It's just that they've got no concept of ergonomics. You know, ergonomics. For example, opening the bathroom door only to find that it doesn't swing freely up against the wall, but it slams against the toilet or a nearby countertop. How about walking into a kitchen and seeing the stove and the refrigerator on the opposite wall from the sink? Which means if you're preparing something in that kitchen, you're always doing the 50-yard dash. And the lighting in these kitchens, even in the richest houses, is atrocious. In fact, I've yet to be in a traditional Latin kitchen where they've actually had a light over the sink. That means if you're doing anything near the sink at night, you feel like you're in a movie theater. Which reminds me of another idiotic mistake Latins often make in their kitchens. When they have a nice big window or set of windows in the kitchen, isn't that the obvious place to put a sink so you get that nice natural lighting when you're working at the sink or the adjacent countertop? Well, I wish they'd tell these Latin contractors and architects about that, because you just don't see it much. In fact, many kitchens, believe it or not, don't have windows at all. And exhaust fans? Well, they haven't heard of those yet either, even though you can buy them in the hardware stores. Which brings me to bathroom exhaust fans, which I guess only restaurant owners seem to know about, because you don't see them in the average Latin home. But let's just say you should do your best to stay out of the average Latin bathroom, which, by the way, are generally lit like medieval dungeons too. And of course, everyone buys the absolute lowest wattage light bulbs that they can, since electricity is so expensive down here. But then again, it's one of the very few things that's more expensive than it is up in the first world. Anyway, so you hear those complaints all the time from gringos who just have nothing but good to say about the rest of their upscale houses or condos, but they hate their bathrooms and kitchens. So let's talk about that for a bit. When you first buy a house or you rent, you're going to run into those kind of problems. And all the gringos and expats who rent just live with it, because you're not going to put your own money into tearing out the bathroom or the kitchen and doing it right. But at least you can put in an exhaust fan and put in brighter lights. And if they're like most bathrooms and kitchens, they're dungeons. So brighten them up by painting them white or some bright color, then put in a couple of big mirrors. That'll help. Because it seems for some reason, Latins are addicted to pukey colors like vomit green, bile yellow, bloodshot pink, baby poop brown, and faded swimming pool blue. Yuck. And you see, those five horrid colors in particular mixed and matched everywhere in Latin America, especially in the middle and lower middle class neighborhoods. And like expat Eddie says, it's not something you want to come home to after one too many tequilas. But then again, if you do toss your cookies, it won't affect the decor. Oh, and now that I'm talking about housing and real estate a bit, let me mention this. Latin America is just chock full of really excellent carpenters, woodworkers, and craftsmen in general. And though when you walk into most of their shops, their places are dirty, dusty, disorganized, chaotic, and even dangerous. But this is Latin America, so there is no EPA or OSHA or any inspectors at all. So when you do see a guy in a shop like that wearing a mask, that's his own choice because he's probably already got a foot in the grave. Anyway, what these little carpenters and cabinet makers can put out can be spectacular indeed. In fact, the other day, I was at a woodworking shop watching a guy put the finishes on a teak hardwood cabinet. Man, was that a sight to behold. And cheap? I'll say, but we'll talk about that later. Anyway, I was in there because an expat friend of mine decided he's going to rip out his old 25-year-old kitchen and have a brand new one installed from scratch. And you wonder why he didn't do it a long time ago. Well, it seems to be a male thing. Once we get used to something, we can put it up with it forever, even if it sucks. Now, the fact is, and you probably know this already, a lot of us expats who live alone are real dyed-in-the-wool cheapskates. I mean, come on, that's what brought a lot of us down here in the first place, the cheap cost of living, right? And ladies, you know this about guys in general. When left to our own devices, we can live and survive quite nicely and even prosper under conditions that no woman would ever tolerate. Do you remember that hit Broadway play some time ago called In Defense of the Caveman? Well, it's true, we do like our caves. Oh, and by the way, that Broadway play, In Defense of the Caveman, actually made the rounds down here in Latin America. In Spanish, of course. In fact, all the big hit plays in one-man acts eventually make the rounds down here. In Spanish, of course, too. With a nice big lag time, I might add, of about 5 to 10 years. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, now, as you might imagine, a lot of single expat males come down to Latin America, and they rent or buy, too. And some of them, as any bell curve will bear out, have very good taste. Some of them have pool hall and trailer court tastes. And the other 80% of single males, well, they just want to have a living room with a comfy chair, a gigantic screen TV, and a place within reach that'll hold a six-pack of beer and a large pizza. And that, I can tell you, is the style of a lot of backpackers I know that ended up living down here in Latin America. And the ones that stay usually end up teaching English at a private school, which pays about $400 to $600 a month. So on that, it's impossible to live like a first world person, though you do live better than the average Latin. However, in that case, the housing situation reflects that low salary and would not be acceptable to most of us. Anyway, for now, I'm talking about single expat males who come down here to live. And not just the backpackers, all of the single guys. Basically, no matter how much or how little they pay for their places, they always sort of end up looking like a college dorm room after a party. Unless, of course, you've got a cleaning lady, which most of us have. And that way, if you have people over to the house once in a while, she'll make you look way better than you deserve. But, as we know, if there's a lady in your life or you're courting, things are very different. And I know no one up north uses that archaic word courting. But down here, there is a Spanish equivalent to it. So for all you single guys and gals, that's something to keep in mind. And in Spanish, it's cortejo or noviazgo. And in Spanish, a boyfriend is called a novio and girlfriend, novia. So anyway, if you expat guys are married or have a novia, it's a whole different story. And your house or condo ends up looking the way she wants it. And you know, I'm not complaining. That's the way it should be. Though most guys still need their 52-inch TV and their comfy chair. Even if it's back next to the maid's room, way behind the garage. And what's that called? Your cave, of course. Anyway, no matter what you say, if you're married or live with someone long enough and they have good taste, it's bound to rub off on you whether you like it or not. And you know, some of us guys do and some of us don't know our limitations or our strengths or weaknesses. And that's why I admire so much the way expat Eddie shops for furniture. Now, he knows he's got trailer trash taste. I make sure he never forgets that. So you know what he's learned to do? And I think it's really good advice for all of us men. When he buys a new place or rents a new apartment or whatever, he goes to a nice upscale department store or furniture store, one that has nice complete displays of rooms obviously done by an interior decorator. So what Eddie does is he just walks into a place like that and says, I'll take that bedroom set just like it's displayed. The carpets, the artwork, the dressers, the end tables, the wall hangings, the lamps, the flower displays, the clock, the works. So in the last few years anyway, if you didn't know any better, you'd actually think that Eddie had some taste. But no, he doesn't, but he's just smart about buying things. And since he's got a full-time cleaning lady, even after a year or two, the stuff still manages to look pretty nice. Now, the thing you do have to remember when buying furniture in Latin America, and by the way, they make some absolutely spectacular furniture down here, even better than some of the finest stuff in the first world. Anyway, just a few general tips worth repeating. Remember, of course, never to have wall-to-wall carpeting, but small area rugs and throw rugs are okay as long as the cleaning lady takes them outside every once in a while and gives them a good once-over. And if you don't have a cleaning lady, you'll never do it, so don't get any rugs at all. Unless you don't mind sharing your house with a few nasty species of insects. And remember, you should never have fabric-upholstered chairs or sofas. And the reason for that is, if any of your friends or family have kids, I guarantee your upholstery is going to end up saturated with ice cream or sugary sodas or whatever sticky candy the kid happens to be sucking on. And if you have pets, well, I don't even want to go there. Now, I've been in hundreds of Latin houses. Even in houses that are mansions, I've seen really nice upholstered living room furniture turn into something so stained and disgusting within about 2 years that I wouldn't give it to Goodwill. So, how do you beat that? Well, of course, you always buy darker colors in real leather or, I hate to say it, man-made fake stuff, you know, vinyl. And you know, these days, a lot of vinyl or man-made fake leather looks and feels so much like real leather that honestly, I can't tell the difference, except it doesn't smell right. It smells like plastic. I'm sure they're working on that, too. Though I know some of that man-made stuff that can actually pass. In a couple of years, you can tell it's not leather. For some reason, it doesn't wear like leather does with age. And it'll really take a beating if it's in front of a window and gets a lot of sun. Whereas real leather can take a lot more abuse. And right about now, you guys might be thinking, oh hell, a nice piece of leather furniture is going to cost me $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. And others might be thinking, what a jerk Johnny is for encouraging us to kill animals for furniture. Well, just to let you know, down here they don't kill cows for the leather. Down here they kill cows for the meat, and when Bossy quits making with the milk, so what do you do with the hide then? Make clothes and furniture, right? Well, don't forget, down here in Latin America, they specialize in leather. There's leather shops everywhere, and by my reckoning, you could get leather furniture of the highest quality for about half of what you'd pay for it in the States. Even less when the department and furniture stores are having sales. For example, one furniture store was having a great sale recently, and I bought a matching pair of plush leather sofas in black. Very good quality stuff. And it was one of those sales where you buy one and the next thing you buy is half price. The big stores seem to do that about twice a year down here, so it's worth it to wait for the sale. So get this, I bought two black leather sofas, one a little smaller than the other, but they're a matching set for, get this, $800 for both. So anyway, even if you're on a budget, don't think you can't afford really nice furniture. I mean, real high-quality leather furniture that you may never have been able to afford up in the States. And another thing, let's talk about dining room and kitchen sets for a minute here. Sure, you can get all the Chinese junk if you go to Sears or any of the local department stores. They ship all that crap in there too now. But down here, they have such fine craftsmen, such great woodworkers in their little mom-and-pop shops that you could buy a complete teak dining room set with beautiful teak chairs. We're not talking about laminate here. We're talking about solid rainforest hardwood. With tabletops or dressers made with giant, gorgeous slabs of the stuff. For example, you could get a teak or caoba or any rainforest hardwood dining room table with a set of 6 chairs for under $1,000. Sometimes for even half of that. In fact, Expat Eddie just bought one and it's so nice I hate to put a glass on it and mess it up with a watermark. I'll let him do that first. And he paid about $850 for that. And it's solid all the way through and so heavy you can barely lift it. And one more thing I'll tell you about Latins. They buy those nice teak furniture sets like that, and they never put a glass top on it. So after about a year, it's all scratched and wrecked. They just seem to take care of everything like they take care of their cars. And what's a glass top? $30 or $40? Well, they just don't get it. So let me tell you about these little carpentry shops now, and what's happening with furniture and cabinet making down here. Now recently I've been into a few of these shops, checking out kitchen and bathroom cabinets. And there are quite a few of these little places in every small, medium, and large Latin city. And since there's little or no zoning in Latin America, these little places can just pop up anywhere. And one of the last ones I visited was right next to an evangelical church, which kind of made me smile because I knew the buzz coming out of those saws was a perfect match for the noise that passed for singing coming out of that church. When I was there, they had a nice little competition going. Two carpenters going head to head. Juanito from Salvador versus the carpenter from Nazareth. So anyway, you can go into any one of these little cabinet maker shops and even some of the bigger outfits. When you walk in there, and you can get past the sawdust and the deafening noise of the saws, you'll notice that these days, 90 to 95% of all the work being done is in that junky, crappy particle board called melamine. The stuff they use to build doors, walls, and cabinets in really cheap beginner house construction and in the cheapest low-budget furniture. You know, it's like low-grade formica. It's crap. Anyway, down here in Latin America, where there's this huge building bubble going on, there's so much of that tract home construction that has this kind of junk in it that all these little carpenters and cabinet makers are extremely busy. Even though if you spend a little more money, you could get some of the best rainforest hardwood in the world. And they've got dozens of beautiful rainforest hardwoods to choose from. Teak, caoba, cypress, palo blanco, mahogany, and I don't mean mahogany that you're used to seeing, that light, porous stuff you get up in your Cleveland lumberyard. I'm talking about Honduran mahogany. And that stuff's so dense and heavy. If you don't have a carbide blade on your saw that's super sharp, in a minute it'll start smoking and jam while you're cutting your wood. And of course, the carpenters and cabinet makers and woodworkers still work with that great stuff, but there's just less and less call for it. It's all about demand, and the middle classes can't afford it. But they can't afford the junky tract housing that's going up everywhere. At least the banks and developers are making it possible for them to get financing on very basic starter homes for like $50,000 to $70,000, little cracker box houses. And the doors and trim and kitchen cabinets are built out of the cheapest stuff imaginable, melamine. And the real kicker is, I was in a lumber yard just recently, while a container truck was unloading doors. And guess what? They were coming from China. Cheap melamine press board doors, of course, and some vinyl coated junk, too. So there you have it, folks. They have the best wood in the world down here, but the locals can't afford it. I was pricing out doors, and they had these white vinyl coated melamine jobs for like $35 a piece, you know, for inside doors and closets. Real trailer court junk, you know? Then the next step up was a solid pine door. And believe it or not, now you can get a solid pine door down here that comes from China or Indonesia too, or somewhere in Asia. Or you can buy a solid pine door which weighs about twice as much from the pine that's grown in Central America. Now, a light, skimpy pine door coming from Asia will run about $40 or $50, and they look nice enough, but a door of the local dense rainforest pine will run about $50 or $60. Now, get this. If you want a really exquisite door, you can get a rainforest hardwood door too. Caoba, teak, mahogany, your choice. Sanded but unvarnished and unfinished now, for anywhere from $100 to maybe $175. And I guarantee you, a door like that in the States would cost you anywhere from $800 to maybe $1,500, if you could even get that kind of wood. Because some of those rainforest hardwoods are protected and can't be exported. But you can use them within the country without a problem. But anyway, my main point was, when we went pricing new kitchen cabinets for my friend, the carpenter said he could do a basic small kitchen with cabinets on two walls for about $1,200, complete, in melamine. Yuck. Then he took us into the back of his shop to show us a nearly completed kitchen cabinet set in melamine, and it was awful. His work wasn't awful, but the material was. But this is the amazing thing. Here's this trailer trash melamine kitchen, but it's got a solid marble top on it. I mean, it's an absolutely stunning piece of work. And get this, with a cheap, trashy stainless steel sink stuck in it. Another trailer court touch, right? And my gringo friend said, look, I don't want melamine, but I do like this countertop. Whatever I get, I want a countertop like this. And the carpenter said, a granite or marble top comes with the price of the cabinet. It's part of the deal. Which shocked us gringos and made our jaws drop because we knew that a top like that would cost $2,000 or $3,000 in the States. Maybe more, who knows? So down here, you get the melamine kitchen cabinets for $1,200 and they throw in the granite or marble top. Isn't that cool? Or maybe it's the other way around. You get the granite or marble top for $1,200 and they throw in the melamine cabinets. Talk about a decorator's idea of heresy. So I guess you learn something every day, right? Or you somehow forget what you learned a long time ago. And for me, it was the fact that granite and marble, and jade, by the way, are indigenous to Central America. It's so common, it's cheap. So as long as you buy it here, where it comes from, versus buying and installing it up in the first world, you save on taxes, import duties, and shipping. Oh, and by the way, I do have to mention that in some of the upscale and very high-end building developments, they're installing, get this, synthetic vinyl parquet flooring. Man, is that low class or what? And of course, it's imported from the US or China or wherever. I just don't get it. They've got beautiful hardwood parquet floor down here, and they're installing vinyl parquet. How horrible, huh? And worse yet, a good percentage of these high-end projects are using trashy stainless steel sinks, too. I guess that's why they call it the third world, right? And that's why so often when an expat couple buy a place, they budget an extra grand or two to rip out that trash and put in real porcelain sinks and higher quality fixtures. And what do they do with the brand new junk they ripped out? They give it to their gardener or cleaning lady's husband, of course. And that's why locals love working for gringos, because upscale Latins would never do that for their health. In fact, upscale Latins would never think of upgrading that vinyl parquet flooring or their stainless steel sinks either, so it's a moot point. Oh, and by the way, regarding roofs down here, you know, like I've said before, don't ever put an asphalt roof on your house because the sun down here in the tropics will just kill it. So what do people with money do? Well, they have a concrete roof and they either paint it with a waterproof coating, which isn't very waterproof after a while, or they have a beautiful Spanish terracotta tile roof installed, which comes in a variety of styles, the rounded traditional type like you see in Europe, or overlapped pieces of 1 by 1 foot Spanish tile. Now, if you had a really big house, let's say 3,500 square foot, and your roofing area was about 2,000 square foot, and you lived in the States, and had a real terracotta tile roof installed, I guarantee you, you're looking at 10 or 15 grand. But down here, where they make that tile and make it beautifully, you'll pay about 50 cents a square foot for that stuff, and about a half a buck a square foot to have it installed. So if you have 2,000 square foot of roofing area, what would cost you 10 or 15 grand in the States is going to cost you $1,000, more or less. So the product itself, the roofing tile, is not only a quarter of what you can get it for, the labor is about a fifth of what it would cost in the States, too. So if you come down here, why not get the best? For the price of an asphalt roof up in the States, you could have real Spanish tile that'll last a lifetime, maybe three. Okay, now let's really change gears for a second. As you know, I like to tell the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I don't sugarcoat things. Why should I? I've got no agenda, and I've really got nothing to sell. Though you might say, yeah, Johnny, you give seminars, so you're making money. Well, let me tell you, doing my kind of seminar takes about a month of first world style treadmill work for me. And you know, I already have enough money so that I can live down here exactly like I want without ever having to work another day in my life, as long as I don't live more than a week. Just kidding. Of course, I couldn't live like this up in the States. That's one of the big reasons I'm down here, and one of the main reasons expats come, right? Now, let me tell you, there are a lot of people who just aren't cut out for this kind of life. That means there's always going to be a percentage of those who end up packing up and leaving after a while because it just didn't turn out like they planned. Now, I gotta tell you, nearly all of the expats I know that packed up and went back, 95% of those ended up on the tourist trail, Panama or Costa Rica, where the locals are jaded and contaminated by the gringo dollar, so new expats especially don't know it, but they've got a big target painted on their backs, especially during their starry-eyed honeymoon period, which lasts about 6 months to a year. Anyway, because I won't sugarcoat things, I'd like to read this little blog posting from a disgruntled gringo who couldn't make it down here. Then, of course, I'll throw my 2 cents in. So, here goes. And I want to thank Oscar, one of my seminar guys, for sending me this. It starts out like this. Living abroad, is it worth it? When I first set out over 6 years ago, I would have said, yes, absolutely. Now, this may be a bit dark and introspective, but if you have been thinking about moving abroad, try to absorb what I say. I was so hungry to get out of the U.S. that I was blinded by the adventure, blind to the long-term consequences, blind to the difficulty and stumbling blocks, not just those that newbies run into, but those that continue to plague seasoned pros. Now, I'm going to stop here for a second and say, I'm going to paraphrase here because I'm not part of this guy's blogosphere and I don't get all the pet names and abbreviations and terms he uses with his blogging buddies. And I'll condense and modify this thing as necessary. Anyway, he says, I think I have it figured out, and here's an effort not only to get my own thoughts in order, but to share with others in the hopes that you may avoid the pitfalls. Then he goes on to say, one of his own expat friends says, everyone who starts a blog on Uruguay ends up leaving the place. Now, at first, I said that was BS at the time, but he was absolutely right. In fact, it's not just him. I can give you a long list of my expat friends who have left already or are getting ready to leave Uruguay for greener pastures, most of them on their way back to the U.S. Oh yes, there are a few holdouts, but the numbers are dwindling. Then he says, all the little groups and societies of expats we had that once thrived down there are mere husks of what they used to be. And yes, there are new arrivals to Uruguay, but not really the way it was 6 years ago or so when the first wave seemed to be hitting, which, in my opinion, was the best of the bunch anyway, and the most adventurous souls that could be found. And then he says, moving abroad will change you, it will stress you to your breaking point and test your resolve, it'll make you change your opinion of people and places and of things in deep fundamental ways. In fact, I'm definitely not the same person I was 5 years ago. He goes on to say, as you change, you too will likely come to a point where you no longer want to deal with the pitfalls of living abroad and crave the simplicity and familiarity of the USA despite its warts and wrinkles. It sucks for sure, but everywhere else sucks worse. He goes on to say, moving abroad will stress and most likely destroy your spousal relationship as well. Call me a naysayer, but even if all things are going generally well for both parties, your paths and motivations for living abroad will eventually diverge and the atmosphere will become toxic as these paths tug each other apart. Once again, nobody tells you this stuff when you're going to sign up. It happens to countless relationships I have watched, and it happened to mine despite leaving the dark realm of Uruguay for the promised land of Chile. Now, note that my ex-wife and I have no ill will towards each other, and I still have great relations with her family, but time and stress have set us in opposite directions. Then he says, the only relationships that will survive abroad are those where the assignment is temporary. Even the staunchest couples I have seen, where both arrive with stars in their eyes and everything in alignment, I've watched the spark wither and die countless times. It's not just Uruguay, it's everywhere. Maybe there is something to settling down at home and having a simple life. It never sounded like it would suit me, but then I look at the disaster trail behind me and wonder why I didn't just pull the plug a long time ago. Okay, I'm going to stop there because we're getting towards the end of the show now, and I've only gotten through about a third of this email, so we'll pick right up on this for the next show, so stay tuned. And I'm telling you, you're going to find this extremely interesting, so do put that in your iPod and smoke it.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.